You're listening to the Stress in the City podcast, a self-care resource for the busy and burned out. I'm your host, voiceover artist Brittany Nicole, and each episode, I'm breaking down adulting. Because what's more stressful than being an adult, right? I'll share the best books, methods, and tips to help us all figure out how to do this life thing better. Ready? Let's start the show. Hi, friends. Welcome back to another episode of Stress in the City. I am your host, Brittany Nicole, and today we are talking about one of my favorite topics, therapy. Now, this is really a huge topic. So in this episode, I'm only going to be talking about certain facets. I actually want to do a little mini series in regard to therapy. But this episode, we are focusing specifically on mental health in the Black community because we got some things to talk about and I have thoughts. So let's get into it. First of all, if you're non-Black, then you may not be aware of this, but if you're Black, you're well aware of this, that we have this concept in our culture that we don't do therapy. We don't, that's for white people. We don't need help. We don't go to therapy, you know, because we're strong. We're resilient. Or we don't put our business out in the streets. Or I don't need therapy. I have my friends, my mom, my church, whatever. You know, we don't do therapy. And we've got to work on that. We really have to work on that. Now, I think that there are several reasons behind where this concept came from, and some of them I think are, you know, legitimate, and some of them I think are just fear-based. First of all, socioeconomic status might not make therapy financially feasible, and that's real. You know what I'm saying? I see this changing more with my generation and my peers, and I actually have several friends who are in therapy. But when I think about my mom's generation, like, they weren't doing therapy. My grandmother's generation, they wasn't thinking about therapy. Like, you know, and my great-grandparents were enslaved. So, yeah, it's something that's become more accessible in more modern times. But if you compare it to a physical doctor, we're born, you know, in the presence of a physical doctor. We spend all our lives going, you know, to get shots and stitches and this and that. So we're very familiar with that process. But for many of us, nobody has ever in our family, you know, gone through the process of finding a therapist or doing therapy. So not only can there be a lack of resources and availability or access, but just unfamiliar with the process in general or overwhelmed with the process of finding a therapist. And it is a process, you know? So I think that those things are valid reasons why it's less common in the Black community to go to therapy. But I do see this changing because we're talking about it a lot more. Social media is making it a lot more accessible. And, you know, one of the things that I hope to be able to do with my podcast is to share healing and tools and exercises and concepts that I've learned in my journey absolutely for free, because I've been very, very fortunate to be able to do a lot of my healing and to have help, but it has not been free for me. You know, I started off with, okay, well, I'm just going to therapize myself and reading all the books and doing all the research. And I think that that's been tremendously helpful, but I also really, like, I love psychology. And so it wasn't overwhelming for me to learn those things. But when I really started healing was when I started working with someone on my mind and setting goals and having someone to see things in me that I could not see in myself. So I know not everybody's going to be able to access that, and not everybody's going to do it. Let's also talk about the fear of therapy. Like, why is it scary? Well, one, there is no healing without vulnerability. And vulnerability is not comfortable for most people, not just for Black people. But I do think, particularly in our community, we have this aversion to vulnerability. Many of us have negative associations with vulnerability. And, you know, this could be because it wasn't modeled for us growing up. We didn't see people who had room to be vulnerable in their lives because of external stresses and pressures that they were dealing with. Or maybe we grew up in environments where it wasn't safe to be vulnerable. So it makes sense that, you know, we don't see vulnerability in a positive light, or we view it as weakness. Or if it's not that, maybe we have a sense that we need therapy, but it just never seems like the right time, because therapy is work. You know, you're going to be working, you know, you're going to be opening doors that you want to keep closed and unpacking bags that you want to keep closed and don't want to deal with. And it can seem like a lot to start dealing with your shit when you still have a job and kids and, you know, family things going on. Like, it may seem like it's not a good time for you to focus on your own healing in the midst of a hectic life or in the midst of an overwhelming life. These are some of the reasons. These are some of the things that we are dealing with as a community. But regardless of the reason, when we treat not going to therapy as a part of our identity, what we're doing on a large scale is perpetuating cycles of unhealthy relating and passing down trauma. I like to think of it in relation to generational wealth. You know, like, if your grandfather was a billionaire and, you know, he owned property or investments or whatever, aspects of that wealth would probably be passed down to your parents and then to you. And if this is your reality, you're going to start off your life with more resources than the average person. This is going to affect your access to things, neighborhoods that you can live in, education, you know, that you may be able to get, places that you may be able to travel, etc. More resources equals more choices. And I think it's the same with mental health. You know, by doing your healing, especially as a Black person, you are creating mental and emotional wealth for yourself and generations after you. Your descendants may struggle less with the anxieties that you have, or less with the doubts, you know, that you struggle with on a day-to-day basis. And that gives them freedom to make better choices for themselves earlier in life. And I think that that's really powerful. You know, do it for yourself, but do it for those who come after you too. They're going to have their own things that they have to deal with. How can you lighten the load? I feel like that's kind of the way that we need to approach things. So we talked about the fear, right? And if this is so scary and so hard, what the hell do people do it for? Like, what's the benefit of this? I can't answer that for you. I can't answer that for you, because this is going to be super personal. It depends on who you are, what your life experience has been, what you're struggling with, what you want to work on, etc. So I can't say what the benefits for you will be, but what I can say is what the benefits have been for me. And there are more than I can name on a 30-minute podcast episode, but the biggest ones are these. One, reducing my anxiety. I feel like my words are going to fail me with how big of a deal this is. I remember my very first session, And it's called an intake session. And they usually just, you know, it's kind of like an interview. And they ask you questions about yourself, your history, your upbringing, your current relationships, you know, how you're feeling, what you want to work on, just like getting to know you. My intake session needs a podcast episode of its own. But one of the things that I do remember very specifically is my therapist asked me, do I struggle with anxiety? And I was like, I don't think so, but I don't know that I really, you know what anxiety is. Like, how are you defining anxiety? So when she described what anxiety was to me, I was like, oh, you mean thinking? Like, I literally thought that feeling worried all the time, overanalyzing everything, thinking about 10 different ways a situation can go wrong or 10 different outcomes about a situation so that I could be prepared for 10 of them. I thought that that's just the way, you know, it was. I thought that that's the way everybody operated. I thought that that was the only way to be. I actually thought that it was a skill of mine to, you know, be able to think ahead so quickly. And I'm very analytical. My Myers-Briggs personality is INTJ. So I'm very like proud of my analytical mind. So I kind of glorified my anxiety to myself without realizing that it was actually anxiety. I came to learn that there was a different way of thinking. Now, I didn't really dig into my dealing with my anxiety at that time because I was dealing with some other things that were more pertinent. I didn't really start dealing with my anxiety until a couple years later when I was struggling with panic attacks, because at that time, my body made it imminently clear to me that the effect that my thinking can have on my body. I would have a panic attack and I would worry about having another panic attack and it would make me have a panic attack. And I kind of realized like, oh, I am stressing my body out with my mind. And I have been doing this to myself for a long time. I mean, there were some other biochemical reasons behind why I was having panic attacks. But in the time that I had them, I had to learn to manage my thoughts and to manage my emotions. And I learned just how truly your mind and body are connected. Overcoming that has taught me to be more comfortable with uncertainty, you know, and to realize like there are so many things that I want to believe that I have control of that I don't. I can't control other people. I can't control what happens in the future. I have control of this body that I'm sitting in right now. And that's about it. And so I got to a point where that actually gave me peace of mind instead of scaring the shit out of me. And let me tell you, that did not happen overnight. But I'm not going to say that I don't have any anxiety at all anymore. But what I do have are tools for managing my anxiety when it comes up. And when it comes up, it's not, you know, unbearable. I don't have panic attacks anymore. A lot of that has to do with health changes that I made. But, you know, when I'm feeling anxious about something, I just acknowledge, first of all, I'm feeling anxious. You know, I feel this feeling in my stomach that's anxiety. And what do I want to do about that? Do I need to talk to somebody? Do I need to go for a walk? You know, do I need to do something fun? And I find myself, I would say my anxiety reduced from like 95% to 3%. I'm not kidding. I have a lot more peace in my life. And I would not have ever realized that there was something wrong with my thinking if I didn't have someone helping me think better. That was wordy. I told you there are so many benefits. I am probably going to talk about maybe one or two more, depending on how long this gets. Another thing that therapy has really helped me with is living a more authentic life. And that sounds like so delightful and joyous. Like, who doesn't want to live a more authentic life? But let me tell you, oof, that has been hard. That has been hard because I had to realize that the life I was living was one big defense mechanism. Growing up with a constant feeling of, you know, being powerless and being overly controlled, everything I did was a reaction to that, of, you know, proving how empowered I was, proving how independent I was, from the way that I would dress to the songs that I would listen to. Like, I could just see me rebelling against my childhood and so many things that I did. And when I could look at it from that angle, I realized I didn't really know who I was. Who am I without this defense mechanism? Who am I without, you know, this armor? And truthfully, that is something that was simultaneously exciting and scary. And scary. Because you look back at everything, you know, you look back at your reality and it doesn't fit anymore. You know, it's like that red pill moment. Like, you take the pill and you just can't unsee things. And you question everything. You question everything. So it's like a spring cleaning for your life, you know, and getting rid of all the things that don't fit and that don't match and that don't belong to you, and shopping for new things, new hobbies, new friends, new jobs, new everything. And I'm still working on that. I'm still working on transitioning out of things that no longer fit and into things that do. But I'm in the part of the process where that's feeling fun for me and less like I am dying. Truly, that process can be lonely because you don't know yourself anymore. And when your reality collapses, man, it's hard to make sense of what's up and what's down. And I recommend a therapist for those times. So the last thing I want to talk about that has been a benefit for me with getting therapy is improving my boundaries. Where I started was realizing that while I thought I was setting boundaries, I really was just avoiding things. I thought that I was like, I'm Miss Independent and I do what I want to do. Nobody tells me what to do. But there were many times where I said yes to things that I didn't want to say yes to. I'll give you an example. I tried to quit a job and my manager didn't want me to quit. And so I said, never mind. Like that happened, you know, because I had this subconscious belief that I can't say no to an authority figure. So I ended up quitting eventually, but I just lost my nerve in the moment. And I'm like, I can't believe I did that. I can't believe I did that. And let me just say, the reason that I wanted to quit that job was because I almost got carjacked while waiting for my manager to let me in the building. And I was like, yeah, this is not a safe environment for me. But, you know, I had such poor boundaries that I let myself be convinced to do something that actually wasn't in my best interest. A couple of years ago, I read Shonda Rhimes' book called Year of Yes, where she talks about her experiences in a year where she tried to say yes to as many things as possible because she realized that she was like really closed off and She wanted to work on that. So this has been my year of no. And what that means for me is, you know, instead of immediately committing to something, I will stop and think about it. And I will come back with either no or yes, and these are my limitations. And sometimes I'm saying no to things that are not like a hard no, just for the practice. And I feel like I'm getting a little bit better with that. Maybe you can relate to some of the things that I've said here, or maybe you want to work on some of the things that I've worked on as well. We all can use some degree of healing. You don't have to be in crisis to start therapy. You know, you can want to work on aspects of your personality. Maybe you also want to be able to set better boundaries, or maybe you want to learn to be more assertive. Maybe you want to improve your confidence. These are skills that you can learn by working with a therapist. Now, like I said, this is only one aspect that we're discussing today in the therapy series. We're also going to be discussing, how do you find a good therapist? What questions can you ask your insurance companies? And some low-cost ways to get the help that you need. So what do you think? Do you think therapy is worth it? Have you tried therapy? Have you had any benefits yourself from therapy? Follow me on Instagram at @itsbrittanynicole and let me know your thoughts. But until next time, I want to just say thank you so much for listening, friends. Bye.